Okay, slide 21 is just a recap of what those measures are. Just really a summary of what we've already talked about, just so it's all in one page. Slide 22 has the grading scale that I use for these simulations. Since we simply went from 800 points to 1600 points, it's just a doubling of the current scale. I know this is an area of concern for a lot of folks out there. By no means is this the final scale, but this is at least our initial cut in terms of just for this particular simulated run. So you'll see, for instance, the A, which is currently based on 525 out of 800, becomes 1,050 out of 1,600 points. The next slide, which unfortunately doesn't have a number on it, but it's 23, is just some more information. This is the averages for all those schools that we ran a simulation on each of the particular components. And keep in mind, these are the figures that make up a component which already take into account a growth adjustment. So for example, that 79 for overall rate already has that growth factored into it. So just for your information, 17% on graduation rate, for instance, 17% of the schools in the model qualified for some sort of growth adjustment to their calculation. So if this was just pure graduation rate for all our schools in this particular model, it would have been 78. But with growth factored in, the average comes out to be 79. You'll notice participation. I've listed the three options based on the calculations I talked about earlier. If we use the denominator of all 9th through 12th graders, the average is 16%. If we use the denominator of 11th and 12th graders but provide schools credit for the 9th and 10th graders who take accelerated coursework, 35. If it's a pure 11th and 12th grade measure, it's 28%. And you see also the performance indicators. Remember, keeping in mind that these are more than likely underestimates because, like I mentioned, we only have data for this particular model on those students that showed up at a public post-secondary Florida institution. Add all those points together, it sums to 443 points, which equates to a C on the current 800-point scale.
Can you address why, with 150 points being available in acceleration, we're seeing a 35 that just seems, is the highest one there, it just seems awfully low. What does your analysis show there?
Well, keep in mind that 150 here is on the top edge for both participation and performance. In order for a school to earn 150 points, all their students in 11th and 12th grade, for instance, would have to have had six or more accelerated courses taken, or in this particular model, six or more college credits earned or certifications earned. So it's a pretty high threshold at this point. Remember, this is back to 2007, before there is a statewide accountability system that holds schools accountable for having students enroll in these accelerated courses, perform these accelerated courses. So I'm not surprised that it is within this realm. But I will mention that there are schools out there that earn close to 100 or over 100 points. And you'll see that in the school-by-school results.
Okay, thanks.
Slide 24, let me walk through this in terms of just overall results. And there are multiple columns, so let me walk through each one separately. This is really this is the distribution of grades for our high schools. Again, there are no combination schools here. These are all only high schools back in 2007. And you'll see back in 2007, we had 55 A schools, 86 B schools, 119 C high schools, 102 D high schools, and 30 F high schools, for a total of 392 high schools. The next thing I did was apply the low 25% rule change that occurred in 2008 to these results, so that we are starting off on how the current rule is formulated in reference to a school dropping a letter grade in terms of the performance of their bottom quartile. That changes the distribution somewhat, and you see that there. A few more A schools, a few more C schools, a few fewer D schools. The next step is applying the new components to that group of schools. And as you can see, we lose 29 schools in this particular model run. So three out of the 392 schools, 29 schools had insufficient data on the new measures based on that cell size, remember, of at least 10 students. Key thing to keep in mind here, looking at those 29 schools, they are predominantly brand new schools in 2007. And typically when a high school opens for the first time, they start off with just 9th and 10th graders, for instance. So you don't have 11th graders, you don't have 12th graders. By definition, you don't have a high school graduation rate. So a lot of these schools drop out because of that component, which lends itself to discussion of a business rule when we get to implementing this in rule. If we're for new high schools, those high schools that don't have 11th and 12th graders, perhaps the school grade should revert back to the FCAT only basis, so as not to drop them completely out of the accountability system, award them on the 9th and 10th grade performance that they currently have. So, okay. Third column there is basically your comparison group to the current FCAT system. 363 schools, distribution of grades applying the 2008 Low 25 rule change. And then you see the results for each of the three simulations. The options here reflect those options I talked about for the acceleration calculation. We can focus more on option two here, the one that has the acceleration component that is the denominator is 11th and 12th graders, but schools receive credit for 9th or 10th graders that enroll in accelerated coursework. As you can see, we have fewer A's and B's, more C schools, and an uptick in our F schools. We go from 26 F schools, for example, in the comparison group to 44 here under option two. It's not considerably out of line with other points in time where we have changed the school grading formula, where we have raised the bar and we see that uptick in F schools, for example. Our most recent case when we added science in the low 25, we went from about 20, and this would be all schools, elementary through high, went from about 20 F schools statewide to about 80 F schools statewide. So it's not unexpected to see for us to see an uptick as we've raised standards once again here with a new model. Slide 25, just some...
Ron, before you go to 25, this is Ron Blocker. Going back to your F schools, the third column, explain the decrease in schools in your D and F schools on your third column.
Those are the schools that drop off because we have low data counts on the new elements. So they received an FCAT grade. They had enough data for their FCAT components. They don't have enough data for these new components.
Well, I'm wondering that if there's a socioeconomic factor in this, and it probably is, and especially with today's economy, possibly that those schools may not be offering the types of courses, either the AP or any other accelerated courses, that some of the other schools. So this could be an economic impact that, as Paul stated earlier, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer.
This would not be a reflection of accelerated course offerings, because keep in mind that the denominator for accelerated course offerings are 11th and 12th graders for participation and those students enrolling for performance. This is more a reflection of the fact that these schools do not have an 11th and 12th grade because they're new schools. We don't have a graduation rate, for instance, for these schools. So it's really more an artifact of these are schools that are starting out, only have 9th and 10th graders. We can't calculate a graduation rate for them, so they drop out of this particular model run.
But are you saying then that there's some new schools that started out DNF?
Yes, more than likely. I go back to verify that they were in fact new schools, but yes.
Okay, that's kind of unusual. Okay, thanks.
Juan, this is Mike Grego.
Also, one more point on that. Keep in mind, this was the first year that with the science component, and a lot of those new schools, for example, didn't have 11th grade and had to rely upon a district average on their science performance. So it's probably not unexpected to have some schools, new schools, earning those lower grades the first year.
Yeah, in my estimation, and you're probably right, it's just that I don't see that happening for a DNF school. DNF schools seem to have a different profile, and that profile doesn't lend itself to a new school being created somewhere, and even though it's 9th and 10th grade, the 9th and 10th graders aren't like the ones in the core of the inner city. So I'll take your word on it. It's just struck me as strange.
Juan.
Yes.
This is Mike Grego. I want to go back to the 150 points on the participation and the performance. I think someone else mentioned it before. And just looking at this, I don't know for certain, and I guess my question is if you can just examine it, the percentage that's possible versus a reasonable mean across the state, how does that look when you compare a graduation rate of 70-80% when something is, are you going to get 100% of your students taking accelerated courses? I mean, I think that's what there was, somebody else mentioned it before and I began to look at it. I think it's something we need to look at. That's all. That's my comment.
We'll take a look at that. That's good.
Yeah, we would appreciate looking at that because if you look at the others, it's nowhere near that much of a discrepancy, and it just seems as though that needs another look.
Okay.
Right.
This is Ed Pratt Annals again. I have some concerns in the past when we changed some of the components, i.e. adding science or changing cut scores, typically those happen K-12. When we look at the current school grades, our high school grades in the state are typically worse than our middle, and our middle are worse than our elementary. And this appears at least on the first year, even if we use option two, to make that situation worse. So while I hear you as far as this has happened before, before it was across the board, and in this case it's hitting our high school, and you know, the opinion of a lot of people is it's already kind of slanted against them. And so it brings up the issue again of the reading cut scores and wonder if somehow that could be resolved before these become real elements of the school grading system.
Maybe go on page 25 and see what the analysis is.
On page 25, it contains a summary of, again, option two, just showing of the schools. The majority of the schools maintain their same grade. That's 210 of the schools maintain the same grade on the FCAT model as well as this combined model. 129 schools dropped a letter grade or more. 18 of our former A schools dropped, 49 Bs dropped, 40 Cs dropped, and 22 Ds dropped. There were 24 schools statewide that did improve to a higher grade, so 4 B schools improved to an A, 4 Cs improved to a higher grade, 11 Ds improved, and 5 F schools improved to a D. So there is those are the results as it stands right now for this initial model run, keeping in mind those caveats I went over. We will be sharing these school-by-school results for you on option two. But that's where we stand at this point in terms of simulations. Again, back to Jay and really Paul's point early on the phone, this is our first cut here. This is by no means the end of the road. By no means are these final grades, so to speak. It's just for us to get an idea of what it could look like. Applying the proposal as we have talked about over these past few months.
Juan, this is Rick Fleming in Brevard County. I have a question about combination schools. Again, I know you referenced it in each one of the three conference calls, but we have not come to any definitive discussion on how those are going to be calculated within this new formula. In Brevard County, 15 of our high schools are, 4 of which are combination schools, and I'm very concerned that we haven't talked about this at any length or come to any discussion about it at all.
I think our initial, way back, my initial thinking on this was to treat, if they offered 12th grade, to treat them the same way as a conventional high school. But obviously a lot of folks brought up some very valid points on that. And so I think you're correct. We haven't really talked definitively about it, but I would assume that when we get to that point, it will not be a system where 50% of their grade is based on this. It would be more proportional to the grades offered. A lot of these new measures are more focused towards your 11th and 12th graders, So, for instance, in a 6 through 12 school, I would think the high school component would be more proportional to that mix rather than being half of the high school's grade.
Jay, this is Janice Boyd in Lake County. You talked earlier about possibly using or looking at the level 3 for the readiness off the FCAT. Has there been any consideration, because points are well made with the 16, 35, and 28 in the acceleration, of using level 3 kids for the denominator there, because you've got your level 1s and 2s in intensive reading. Is it a good expectation that they would also be in an AP class?
Now, we are defining for readiness the level 3 in math and reading, so I don't know if you want to speak to that at all. Or
We have not considered that at this point. I think the expectation was to have our students graduating from high school with at least exposure to some sort of accelerated coursework, whether that's APIB performance or it's industry certification or some sort of dual enrollment. So really the onus has been on trying to get all of our students graduating with the tools necessary to succeed at the next level, whether that's work or post-secondary education. So right. I think that's been the main reason behind looking at all of our students.
So keeping the level ones in there as well.
Right.
Okay. Hey Juan, this is Bob Crawford. Again, on your caveats on page 20, the last bullet about students enrolled in a post-secondary institution, did you, hopefully, include the tech centers as part of that post-secondary group?
Let me verify that with you. More than likely they are in there, but I'll have to verify that.
Okay, thank you.
Juan, this is Paul Felch. In the original September 22nd PowerPoint, on page 26, you had weightings for the various components. Are those not going to be weighted anymore, or what happened to that?
That was sort of put on the shelf at that point.
Okay.
Taking me way back. We were trying to make this as simple to understand as possible, and that led to some levels of confusion at this point, so we're trying just to keep it more streamlined.
Okay, I just want to make sure I understood it.
The question continues to arise about how much of a weight is the readiness compared to the other factors. That still remains.
Right.
Any additional thoughts or questions?
I do have one question, and that had to do with the ready-to-work bonus that was just mentioned as a possible point of discussion. At what point in time will that be looked at again?
Our step one is to basically meet the requirements of the legislation and for all of us to come to a comfort level with a complete proposal around which we can simulate. If we have time at that point, that would be, I would think, when we would talk about things that are not in the legislation. But our immediate obligation is to meet the requirements of the law.
Thank you.
Ed Pratt Daniels again. One clarification. Going back earlier where we were looking at students who counted for IB and AP, if the student's enrolled in an IB course and takes an IB exam, and additionally takes an AP exam because we've aligned their curriculum so they are prepared for both, would they get credit for the AP exam as well if they're not enrolled in an AP course?
Yeah.
Oh. Yes. The key component there is taking the exam. We want to guard against those situations where a student enrolls in the course but does not take the exam.
No, I get that. I'm just saying if they would take two exams because we've done the curriculum crosswalk, so it's listed as an IB course, and they would only have one course listed on their schedule. They would take the IB exam and a parallel AP exam, and let's assume that they got the required score in each of those. The only course that's listed is the IB course, but they've passed two different exams.
The key thing to keep in mind is the bottom line indicator is exam taken. So in that particular situation where the student enrolled in an IB course but ends up taking an IB test as well as an AP test would earn credit for participation in those two tests and performance on those two tests if they perform so accordingly.
So it'd be the same with ACE and AP and dual enrollment and AP?
Exam trumps it.
Okay, great.
What
thank
we
you.
What we want to guard against is the opposite situation, taking a course and not taking the test. We don't want to count that as a true participation.
Okay, thank you.
Jay, Juan, I want to ask you one more time. I know that I'm probably not even in the parking lot on this. I think I'm under the parking deck with it. But the fifth-year seniors to be considered not in the graduation rate but a possible bonus to encourage high schools to continue to work with kids that entered in the ninth grade from the eighth grade at risk, it would still be successful for them. Just think about it, please.
Got it. Thank you.
I just had one more question about students who are enrolled in Florida Virtual School and how, especially those students that are enrolled in AP courses in the Florida Virtual School, will those courses count towards participation and also based on the results of the test if they are taken through Florida Virtual, if they are students enrolled in our school?
I think the expectation at this point is to yes, include students who are enrolled in a brick-and-mortar school, yet take the AP exam or course through a virtual situation, yes.
Thank you.
Because that is a definite access issue that we need to take into account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I think this is Bill again. I think that's a real good move because that the Florida Virtual School really gives a lot of access to rural schools. It's a good decision.
Could I ask some questions on the industry certification? This is Jean Lamar from Nassau. This might go to Lucy. I'm with a middle school background, I don't understand too much about the certification, but what is involved as far as testing and the different courses in that? Because that might be an option for some of the struggling students that are not as geared toward the AP courses.
Well, the industry certifications are developed related to the requirements that are from specific industries. The list for that we're looking at initially, at least, are those related to the Career and Professional Education Act of 2007, and that list is available on the website for the Division of Workforce Education. You can get to it through the Department of Education's website. And in each of those certifications is a nationally tested certification that is available to school districts. If you have any question about how to access it, Brent Lamond in Nassau County would be your best contact person. He would know.
I just tried to call him today, in fact.
Okay. Well, we work with Brent all the time. We'd be happy to help him get any of the information that he would need to help you with.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy.
You bet.
That would not be considered industry certification necessarily for struggling students. Those exams are very difficult.
They are rigorous examinations.
Yeah. I can see from what you were saying that would definitely promote rigor, but just a different kind of rigor in a different area.
Actually, they are very rigorous in terms of their reading requirements and very often in the mathematics requirements, so they're pretty standard academic rigor as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the questions I brought up last time or the time before is, what about students who take the AP test but don't take the AP course? And you said you're going to look into how that might be calculated for performance.
Yes, if the student enrolls in the exam, that counts as participation, his or her performance counts.
So it counts for participation also?
Yes, the exam trumps the course. What we want to guard is a situation where the student enrolls in the course but doesn't take the exam. We don't want that to count. But
taking the test is taking the course.
Yes.
Okay.
We're not measuring seat time, we're measuring performance. Any other questions? We're close to the end. I want to thank everybody again for participating, and again, the input, again, has been extremely vital as we continue to mature this model. We'll be running some more examples and more simulations. I'm confident this is going to help us to not only define our foundation work through FCAP, but the upper edge of our work in this process. So, again, I want to thank you all for your time and thoughtful consideration of this. Thank you all. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening.
You're great. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.